And on this special day, I have a little special poem to read all of you. It's a short one, and it goes like this. Sunset at night is natural, but sunset on the dawn reverses nature. Master, so midnight's due at noon. Eclipses be predicted, and science bows them in. But do one face us suddenly, Jehovah's watch is wrong. Well, that's Emily Dickinson, circa 1862, and it's one of the reasons why I'm very excited to speak with Matthew Zapruder. He's the author of a new book called Why Poetry, and he joins us now. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So what did you make of my reading of Emily Dickinson's Eclipse poem?
I thought it was great. I loved it. I was immediately in the presence of the great one, Emily Dickinson.
I mean, the reason why I wanted to start with that is obviously today's a very special day. But, you asked this question about why poetry. I feel like that's a perfect answer, that poetry is able to capture things, moments, transcendent experiences, even transcendent physical experiences in a way that virtually no other art form can.
I think so. And just to suddenly feel that the experience of this person who lived in the mid-19th century is, in a way, very much like the one that we're having today.
Hmm. Well, in your book, you talk about how poetry oftentimes, though, is something that people might find intimidating, right? If they, first of all, on first blush, don't necessarily connect with, you know, someone like Emily Dickinson, maybe they're put off by it.
I think that we've been told that the wrong thing is difficult about poetry. We've been told that it's hard to understand and that the words often don't mean what they seem to mean or would mean in other places in our lives, or that there's some hidden message we need to dig up and uncover, and that's the point of reading poems. And that's not true. What's hard about it is that it's unfamiliar and it requires us to slow down and concentrate and maybe accept some new thoughts and new ways of thinking. But that's also what's exciting about it. And so its difficulty is something other than the scholarly difficulty that has been communicated to us.
I mean, so is part of the problem how poetry is taught? Is it something that should even be taught? Because I know I've sat in many a class where we might read a poem and the instructor, with the best of intentions, will say, well, you see this line here, this stanza here, what the poet is saying is blah, 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 right? And it, and it's like, well, really? Because that's not what's on the page.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've been in those classes myself. I think that it can be taught, but it should not be taught in that way. It should be taught by refocusing us on what the poet is actually saying, as you said, and digging deeper into the actual words on the page and asking ourselves, why this word? Why these words in these orders? What's going on here? What do we see? And then that's the way in. And that kind of attention might not come naturally, especially to younger students. And I think the role of a teacher can be to, you know, help get the students into that space.
Well, and if I understand correctly, when you teach poetry to students, you often have them investigate, as you're saying, the actual words and the dictionary definition of those words.
Right. I mean, it's exciting because, you know, there's so many words that we take for granted that are so exciting. I mean, even a word like eclipse, I bet if we went to the Oxford English Dictionary, we could find out a lot of exciting information about the first time it was used and what else it means and what other, you know, uses of that word there were and are now. And it would be exciting and fun, and it would remind us that language is in and of itself an interesting thing.
Now you got me wondering, so I'm looking it up right now. Okay, so I'm not using the OED. I'm going to use Merriam-Webster. Eclipse, yes. We have the definitions: total or partial obscuring of one celestial body by another. First known use, 13th century.
Wow.
Wow.
And one wonders what they called it before then.
Exactly. In your book, you illustrate some of the different ways that poems work. And you ask us to look at language differently through the structure and art form of a poem in something that you call defamiliarization. So what do you mean by that?
Right. So that's a concept that a Russian literary theorist, Viktor Shklovsky was his name, he came up with this term, defamiliarization, to describe how art works in general. And he says art makes the stone stony. So it reminds us of the actuality of physical objects or of language or feelings by defamiliarizing, making things strange again so we can re-perceive them. And I found this to be a very useful idea in poetry, because this is what happens. You know, poetry, I think sometimes if we don't think about it that much, we might think, oh, it's full of only fancy words, but it's actually full of simple language that's made strange and therefore new for us again.
Do you have an example? Because I think there's one by Langston Hughes that you point to in the book.
Yeah, this very short poem really struck me when I read it as a kind of perfect example of defamiliarization. It's just called Suicide's Note. The calm, cool face of the river asked me for a kiss. And what I say in the book is that the idea of a river's face, that's something that we might say that something, a building or a river or something or mountain has a face, and we don't remember that face means face. But in this case, he reminds us that the face of the river is actually literally asking to be kissed, and that in a way is the lure of jumping into it for the suicide.
Hmm. Who is this book for, I have to say? Because on first glance, I think, you know, is this something that would end up in a college course? Is it something for the casual reader of a poem? Who are you writing for?
I wrote it for all those people I meet who say they don't understand poetry. They don't get it. They feel like they just don't have a connection with it. And it makes me sad when I hear that, because I feel like it's like saying, oh, I don't like music, or I don't like food. Mm-hmm. I mean, poetry, there's so many different things that make up poetry. And I'm quite sure that for every person, there are poems there. And that experience of reading poems is something that is, I wouldn't want anyone to be without if that's what they wanted. So I wrote the book for these people.
And finally, I'm just curious. I mean, the title is Why Poetry? What is your answer to that question?
There's a private answer to that and also a public one. The private answer is that it protects and enlivens a space within us of free imagination that's so precious in our current environment. And to go to a poem and read it, it's just we can reconnect with this internal landscape, our own imagination. And I think there's also a public answer to that question too. I mean, one has to do with what we were talking about earlier about the protection of the precision of language and its accuracy. I don't need to remind our listeners that that is under threat. And poems, you know, fight back against that by being precise and interested in the actual meanings of words and their accuracy. And finally, I just say that there's a public use to poems in that they reconnect us with the imaginations of others, mm-hmm. not by telling us that other people exist, but by allowing us to actually experience another person's imagination. And that kind of empathy and that kind of connection to people distant from us is, I think that's what we need to move forward.
Yeah. So on that note, can I offer you another little excerpt of an Eclipse poem?
I would love to hear one.
This one is from a poet I've struggled with over my lifetime a little bit, but deeply admired, Siegfried Sassoon. It's kind of long, so I'm just going to read a tiny excerpt. He talks about the countermarch of clouds that troop intent, fire-crested into conflict. And then he says, at the wood's edge in bronze and olive gloom, sickness assails the sun whose blazing disk dwindles. The Eden of those auburn slopes lowers in the tarnished copper of eclipse.
Oh my God, that's gorgeous. That's so good. Mm-hmm. I was thinking my favorite sun poem, it's not really an eclipse poem, but it's Frank O'Hara's great poem, A True Account of Talking to the Sun at Fire Island. And it's a little too long to read, but at the end of the book, I write about it. And it's just a beautiful poem where the sun wakes up Frank O'Hara and he, and then they have a conversation where the sun reassures him of his poetic vocation. And it just ends with this, sun, don't go. I was awake at last. No, go I must. They're calling me. Who are they? Rising, he said, someday you'll know. They're calling to you too. Darkly he rose, and then I slept.
Fantastic. Well, Matthew Zapruder's new book is Why Poetry. It has been such a great pleasure to talk with you on this day, especially, Matthew. Thank you so much.
Me too, and thanks for sharing those great Eclipse poems.